The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Aubrey, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Yeah, great. Third time lucky for us.
That's right. Let's go.
Tell me about timing for you. I want to understand what it means for you when things that you've planned don't manifest the way that you potentially would have liked for them to happen, and how has that changed for you over the years doing the work that you've been doing on yourself and understanding how reality works? Talk to us about timing.
You know, it's interesting because it's both, and we need to plan. It's important to plan, but at the same time, God is laughing, because there's always some other way that the plan could work out, or some way that the universe is going to throw something else up there. I mean, we just had a snowpocalypse here in Austin, Texas, for the first time since 1949. All kinds of shit that was planned didn't happen. You know, so we don't really know. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean that we should stop planning. You know, we're trying to bring order to the wild chaos of the universe. And we do our best, but we have to ultimately surrender. And when things happen like this, just say, okay, you know, like this is... we're in the ocean. You know, you can't control everything. You can set your sail. You can set your destination, point your compass towards something. But the sea is the boss. You know, the wind is the boss. And you have to just surrender to that with a smile.
How has that journey been for you, sailing that course over the years, from a young man to, I mean, you're still a young man now, but, you know, because you're an entrepreneur, like I am, we've got deadlines, we've got all of these things that we put on ourselves and expectations that we put on ourselves. So again, I'd love for you to unpack that journey for the listener and viewer, because some people might be where you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or even today in their own personal journey of trying to understand this whole idea of setting an expectation, like you said, or an intention, but letting go and surrendering into that. And how has that become easier for you, or has it become more difficult for you over the years?
You know, ultimately, I think if I look back and if I could give my younger self some advice, it would be just to have a lot more faith that it's all going to work out, that everything that, you know, I really wanted and dreamed was actually going to happen, because, you know, it was a tumultuous path. It didn't always turn out. It certainly didn't happen at the on the timetable that I thought it would. I mean, I was 30 and I was like, what the hell am I doing with my life? Like, that was right before Onnit, you know, kind of became what Onnit was going to become. And I was like, I must have gone left when I should have gone right. And there was all of this doubt and all of this feeling like it was too late and I made a mistake and it was never going to work. If I could just go and, you know, whisper in my 20-year-old self and 30-year-old self's ear, I'd be like, hey, it's going to be okay. I promise. Just have fun where you are right now. Continue doing everything you're doing. You're going to do that anyways. Can't do any other. But enjoy it more, man. Like, really enjoy it more. Because the road is windy. You know, there's curves and turns and twists and tangles. And if I had a superpower, like a lot of people are like, if I had a superpower, I'd like to fly. If I had a superpower, it'd just be to have faith. Faith would be my superpower. If I could just really believe that it's all going to work out. But the great thing, that superpower is a choice. You know, I can't turn myself invisible by choice, but I can have faith by choice. It's not an easy choice, but that's what I'm really working on now.
And how do you remind yourself of that?
I mean, maybe I should get a tattoo on my finger here. You know, like, that's the funny thing about tattoos is whenever somebody gets a tattoo on their body, people think like that's something they exemplify. No, that's a reminder. That's a post-it note that you're putting on yourself right there. That's something you're working on. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't tattoo something that you've mastered. You tattoo the thing that you're working on. I think it's just it's more and more awareness. I have more and more evidence accumulating all the time that faith is warranted. And also situations that you uncover where, irregardless of how the situation turns out, if I'm spending time, let's say time A is today, and an event is going to happen on, you know, 2 weeks from now. And of course, I'm going to think about all the possible ways that the event could go wrong. That's fine. But if I live in faith that they will go right, I'll start to see the opportunities that can help make it go right. I'll be a happier person. I'll be less stressed. My journey through life is going to be better. And if shit goes wrong in 2 weeks, okay, I'll deal with it. I always deal with it. I'm well equipped to deal with it. Again, back to the storms at the sea. I know how to handle a storm. I've been in a bunch of them. I'll be fine. It's frustrating because honestly, I know it. I really know it. And still there's a one click of the dial left where everything just drops off. And I'm like, I just have faith. I have fucking faith. And I'm working on that, you know?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because my wife and I are about to open a wellness retreat. And I don't even like the word wellness. It's just going to be a sanctuary for people to come and experience. They might come for a weekend or they might come for a week, depending. And one of the things I've been maybe challenged, isn't the right word, but curious about is the better terminology and the better feeling that I have, is that I wonder how I'm going to deal with other people's expectations of what they want to achieve out of a weekend away with my wife and I in a place like this. And I know you've held retreats and summits and conferences and all of this where you know how you're going to show up. How do you navigate the expectations of others when they show up to the Aubrey event or whatever it may be that you're a part of? How have you had to navigate that to the best of your ability without being caught up in other people's expectations?
So for me, I'm the reprieve that I get is that I know that, you know, if I'm able to show up, you know, if I'm able to be there and deliver, like we have these fit for service fellowship retreats, you know, many times a year, and a big group of men and women gather and we go through these transformational initiatory rituals and different things, not plant medicine, but heavy breath work and ecstatic dance and temazcal and guided meditations and workshops and all of these different processes, right? And we've been doing this for years now. And even before Fit for Service, there was, you know, other one-off events I'm doing. It's actually, you know, I really enjoy actually taking people through a year-long process. But I know that if I'm there, I'm going to deliver. I have an immense confidence in myself. But that's not to say that I'm not terrified that, especially since COVID hit, I'm not terrified that I'm going to get COVID. And then all of a sudden, it's not, I won't even be able to show up. Like normally, like I play basketball sick. I've done a lot of things sick. Like I'm sick. I'll show up. I'll still show up. I have that confidence. But now it's like, oh shit, I got COVID. I can't even show up. And so that terrifies me. What terrifies me is me not being able to actually step onto the court. Like me not, it's not, I'm not worried about how I'm going to play and how other people are going to receive how I'm going to play. I'm confident. Like I know what I got. I got the fucking goods. But am I going to be able to step out on the court? Yeah, I might miss some shots and whatever, but I trust my play. But I do get really, really nervous. It's so much so that sometimes before an event, I'll like psychosomatically get myself in a place where, am I coming down with something? What's going on? And it's like clockwork. I'm like, no, you're not. You're fine. This is just your head and your own fear that for some reason you're not going to be able to, you know, be at this event and show up for everybody. So I do deal with those expectations. For me, it's more about something that I can't control removing me, even though you can somewhat control your health through the way that you think. And there is definitely a strong mind-body connection. And I'm not trying to deny that, but it's the things that are out of my control that actually make me worry. But when it's there, I have a lot of confidence. So I think ultimately that's if I'm giving advice, it's building that self-efficacy to know what you're able to deliver. And in many ways, it's like an ayahuasca shaman. You know, they know the medicine is strong. They know their ikaros are pure. They know that they're going to show up and they're going to deliver. And what happens with the individual? Well, that's up to the individual. But it's they know who they are. They know the medicine that they're providing. And so I don't think, you know, the maestros and maestras and curanderos, they're not nervous before a ceremony. This is what they do. They know who they are. They know what they deliver. And I think that's the place we all want to get to, that radical self-efficacy.
I want to ask you about then responsibility for others. When you are going on this journey, I mean, you've chosen to show up in this world as what I would say as one of the leading lights and leading examples of somebody that is willing to put it all on the line, willing to put his life on the line to explore what it means to be human in this experience, through your body, through your mind, and through your spirit. And you've written books, you conduct podcasts like this, you put yourself out there into a space where a lot of people seem to have no idea how to navigate this gift called life. Do you feel any responsibility for how others go on this journey when they discover Aubrey Marcus?
I feel an immense amount of responsibility, maybe not in exactly the same way that your question was kind of highlighting. I'm not really worried so much about how they'll perceive me. In some ways, you know, I worry about, we're in a time now where people manipulate the truth and people try to paint pictures about other people. And I know you're well aware of this, and so many people that were people with their own motive and initiative will just try to paint you, you know, the color that they want, and then the public can kind of look at that unaware and have a biased perception of who you are. And I guess that is something that concerns me. But ultimately, like, the solution to all of this is, again, those people painting you in these different colors and in these different lights, it's like the sea. You can't really control it. What you can control is your boat. You can control whether you tack the sails. You can control your own humility, your own love, the way that you show up in the world. And that's the relief for me. I do feel a lot of responsibility, but the relief is just to get back to knowing who I am and just showing up in the most authentic way that I possibly can. Now, the place where I feel a lot of other responsibility is my responsibility, because I know how blessed I am and because I know how many advantages I have and every opportunity that I have. I always feel like I should be doing more. You know, it'll be 12:30 a.m. and, you know, I'll have just watched a movie. My wife's fallen asleep and I'm like, why did I watch that movie? I could have done something, you know, and that's not healthy either. You know, and it's this desire to be like, I could have written a poem or whatever. You know, there's always something that I could have done. So I do put a lot of pressure on myself like that. I'm about to turn 40, and maybe this next 40 years, I'll get a little better at taking some pressure off myself.
I was watching the new Mel Gibson film about Bad Santa or Fat Man or something like that while I was in the bath last night. And I was like, I'm actually quite happy sitting in the bath watching some trash movie at the moment. You know, I was having a really nice magnesium bath at the same time. We're allowed to go on this journey and choose the path that we want at any particular point in time. And I wanted to get back to when people come to you and seek your guidance or seek your advice or your wealth of knowledge about not becoming a guru figure for somebody, but really putting the onus back onto these individuals to have complete responsibility over their own actions. Talk to me about that, because obviously you must have had every single type of person attend and want to absorb your knowledge. And to the point that some people do a lot of workshops and still are in the same pattern, even though they do a lot of workshops. So how do you break that down for somebody to show that they're the answer?
Yeah. There's a saying that I love, and it's, a healer can heal you, a master teaches you how to heal yourself, and a mystic reminds you that you're already healed. And I think for me, that's something that I always keep in mind. Like, if people are relying on me to do something for them or to them, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm not here to be that. I'm here to teach them, at the very least, to teach them how to heal themselves. And when I really can reach to my highest potential, I'm showing them the truth that they already are everything they want to be. The most important thing that they are craving is actually already inside and has nothing to do with the extrinsic desires they think are going to make them whole. They already are whole. So that actually is the way to keep from, you know, being in this figure. And I think it's been misused a lot, because a lot of people like the power of, I can do this for you and only I can do this for you. So keep coming back to me and I'll keep healing you in that way. But that's not the way. That's just a way to build yourself up. The real way is to show people how to do it for themselves, you know, and it ultimately, as the mystic does, remind them that there may be nothing that needs to be done, that they're already there and they just have to acknowledge it.
Such beautiful words to hear, because we go through this process of learning that through our own experiential journeys, and plant medicines and toad medicine or 5-MeO-DMT can be a very powerful tool for mm-hmm. that. I believe they're some of the most powerful tools that we have to realize that we actually are the medicine. And that came to me in a breathwork ceremony, actually, but I was attending a week-long experience with grandmother ayahuasca. But the first night was breathwork, no medicine. Well, no, plant medicine, I should say. It was breathwork. And it was one of the most powerful experiences I've had, because all that came to me in that journey was, you are the medicine. You are the medicine. You are the medicine. Mm-hmm. It was like a mantra that just kept coming through. And then over the next few nights, I got to experience that in different realms, drinking medicine. And I know that you have started to facilitate and help people in these journeys. And I want to dive a little deeper into that and understand what has taken you to this point in 2020, 2021 to facilitate these experiences for people. And on a selfish level, what do you get out of that on this journey? What is the growth for you to be in that position now?
Well, so just to really be transparent about what you just mentioned, I started my plant medicine journey when I was 18. That was 22 years ago. And so I did it the right way right from the start. I was out in the mountains in New Mexico with the shaman, and we did it in, you know, set our intention out in the wild. Everything about it was as it should be, you know, a real vision quest style. And from there, continually, I kept doing plant medicine in this ceremonial way, in the right set, in the right setting. So I had a lot of awareness about how to offer this. I've never considered myself a shaman, nor do I consider myself a shaman now. But as somebody who could be a guide, someone who could like say, all right, I can set a safe container and I can allow the medicine to be the medicine, and I can just, you know, kind of hold the bounds of this thing and allow you to experience this because I've been through it and I can help. That's always been something that's been a part of, you know, part of what I can offer. Now, what you're referring to is probably what Luke's story was talking about when I actually went through an initiation with a Siri elder. And the Siri is a medicine tribe out of Mexico, and they offer both combo and bufo, which is the 5-MeO-DMT. What I was doing was learning how they facilitate. And that was very interesting to me to actually see what it was like to take that a step further, rather than just being a passive, you know, kind of space holder in these medicine journeys for friends and things like that. What would it be like to be a more active participant, you know, and put on the shaman goggles for a little while and see what they see? And it was incredibly powerful. I mean, so insightful for me. It was one of the most impactful things I've ever done. Where does that lead? I don't know, but it opened up things in me that are, you know, I'm finding out more about myself, because everybody's a mirror for us in many different ways. So when you become that active participant and can start to really tap into somebody else's energy field and feel what they're feeling and find the sympathetic resonance with whatever they're going through and really see them, I think that skill in and of itself in that practice is really valuable, because then it collapses this separateness that the ego tries to maintain, and you really realize that everybody is you living a different life, and you can feel it. It's a known feeling of that, you know, and that was really a special thing to be able to do. I obviously don't have the time nor the inclination to be a facilitator or do this. I have lots of shit I want to do. And then, but I like the idea that if I have somebody really close to me and my family or friend, and they really want to have an experience, that I can offer them something more than just being a passive wallflower who knows how to hold the pipe and light it the right way, you know? So, it was cool for me to experience that.
You mentioned something there that you had your first experience at the age of 18. And my perception is we somehow live in this Western culture where our rites of passage or our initiation into something greater seems to have disappeared, because I don't even know whether we actually had it for too long. But when we look at, and when I study tribal cultures in how they ate, one of the common threads was many of them go through this initiation process of child to either man or woman. And it's something fascinating, and it's always sort of been in my awareness that I wonder how we do this culturally, and whether this, at this period of time in 2020, 2021, with what's going on, somehow is an initiation process for something larger. And this is a dark passage for some to be going through at the moment, because they're disorientated, probably feel very lost and alone and frightened of what's around the corner. And there's no one here really to guide us in this. There is, but it can feel very, very lonely for a lot of people. That's the message that I seem to be getting. And they're looking for people to save them through this process. And it's like, well, I keep thinking back to these initiations, these rites of passage that humanity had somehow built into their cultures. Yet we seem to not have that at the moment. So I want to get your take on initiations, rites of passage, and perhaps your take on the last 12 months and preceding that, because there were signs that this was coming.
Yeah. Rites of passage initiations are they're impossibly important. I cannot use more superlative language to describe how important they are and even make sense. They're absolutely vital because they serve multiple different purposes. The first purpose is they create a line of demarcation where you can actually grieve what you're transitioning out of. And this is a big issue that I think we have. And I read a book called The Smell of Rain on Dust by Martine Prestel, and he talks about the importance of grief. And it just really opened my mind to understand that one of the key functions of an initiation is to allow you to transition from one to the other and also honor everything that was and then welcome everything that's coming. Because if you do that seamlessly, you might miss both of those key things. You might miss the honoring, the grieving of what once was, your childhood, your adolescence, the freedom of no responsibility as you step into manhood and carry this mantle. So it's combining both the grief and the respect and the love and the praise for the past and the sorrow for letting that go with the intentional choice and honoring of, now I'm taking this mantle. I'm choosing to be a man. I'm walking through this gate with my own 2 feet, whatever that gate is, whether it's an actual mountain or it's a plant medicine or it's a, you know, jungle bungee jump. You know, that's one of the initiations they have. It's one of the craziest ones. But whatever it is, you're walking through intentionally and you're choosing to do this and you're moving through this thing by your own choice, by your own volition. And that's another really important thing. So it creates the line, it honors the past, and it allows you to consciously choose the future. So that way, anything that comes in the future, like, why is this happening? Well, if you've had an initiation, well, it's happening because I chose this. I knew this was coming and I chose it. But one of the key functions of an initiation, how it actually works, there's elders who have been through it, elders who are wise, elders who understand the journey and can be there with intelligence, compassion, wisdom, and support. So if you look at what's happened to the collective, this is absolutely an initiation, but it's an initiation minus the elders. Like what would be a healthy initiation would be if we had a pandemic and we had our leaders were all the smartest, most compassionate, least biased individuals amongst us, the best of us. If the best of us were all of our leaders, of all of the organizations, all of pharma, all of politics, all of news, all of everything, if they were the best of us, we would be pulling together like, yep, this was a bit of a sticky one, but we made it through stronger. And, you know, like everybody would be like, we got this. But right now it's just fucking chaos because we actually have some of the worst of us who are leading us, you know, so it's the opposite. It's like upside down world. So then it's one of those haphazard initiations, like, you can have a car crash initiation or you can have a war initiation. There's lots of ways that you can step into an initiation. Doesn't mean that we can't consciously choose to make it something important for us, but it's not being designed in a way that's productive. It's just kind of chaotic and random. And I think that really highlights that we need to demand better leaders of everything. We need to demand better. And how do we demand better? With our votes, with our dollars, with what we buy, with what we, you know, how we vote. Well, but before that, we have to also have people who agree that we need better. And so everybody has to kind of be on the same page. It's not like a leader is going to emerge out of the muck. A leader will come when the world demands that a better leader come. So for me, I just really try to focus on the people. How many people can we get to that state of love and solidarity and understanding? There's the more people that you have behind that, the more that they'll vote with their votes and vote with their dollars. And I think we'll get the elders in the right position to help us through not only what's happening now, which feels like a trial run for what's probably coming in the future, whether it's environmental or whether it's some other force that's acting. I feel like we got to get our shit together a little bit better before some really gnarly shit happens.
Last time we chatted and we had internet issues, but you mentioned something then. I love the analogy that you use, that this is a game, but it's serious. What we think is serious, like being deplatformed off social media, is the worst thing that could happen to somebody. And it's funny because that's happened to me and people are like, oh, how are you going? Are you okay? We feel really sorry for you that that's happened to you. I'm like, well, it's just part of the game, you know. If that's going to affect the way that I function in this reality, I need to really dig deep and see why that would affect me. Because 20 years ago, none of that existed. There was no social media. So how can we become reliant upon something that hasn't existed in our experience or our human evolution for, well, for millions of years? I would love for you to dig into that. What we're going through now isn't even heavy yet, so to speak. And I don't want to use the word yet, but you alluded to that this could be a trial run, and to explain how dark it may get. And I don't even want to intend that, but give us a dose of reality, please, Aubrey.
I think the most important thing, which builds in the right attitude to this, is a lot of us our whole lives have known that we're here for something.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.